This is about wild rice, and wild rice still has quite a wild streak in it, even though it's been under domestication and breeding efforts for 4 to 5 decades. It still, in fact, is pretty wild to work with. But we're talking about wild rice and not wild species of oryza. Wild rice in the Americas is Zizania palustris. That's the species that's cultivated. It's an aquatic crop that's grown in flooded soils in Minnesota and California. And it's a cross-pollinating crop, unlike the namesake of rice. And it's also, as I mentioned, newly domesticated. It continues to have issues with seed dormancy and seed shattering. So this is about heterosis, and we wanted to explore possibilities of exploiting heterosis, and knowing that there was some evidence that indeed there is usable heterosis. Foster and Zhu in 99 in their patent using CGMS observed an average of 33% heterosis in a number of single cross hybrids. And some of those hybrids actually showed 50% superiority. Another evidence of heterosis is that inbreeding depression is observed, and it's pretty severe when you try to self wild rice. In the context of our Minnesota wild rice breeding project, our varieties have been focused on, varietal development is focused on open pollinated population varieties, which have been successful by improving them with recurrent selection, just simple population improvement. Along the way, we've observed several distinct groups of breeding populations as potential heterotic groups. And so our objectives were to test whether heterosis could be useful in population cross hybrids, to estimate the genetic distance among our breeding populations, some of our key ones in fact, and to identify preliminary heterotic groups. The way we went about that was in 2008 we began intercrossing 5 populations that we identified that could form the basis for different heterotic groups. And they were crossed to each other in a non-reciprocal dialogue fashion to result in 10 population crosses. These crosses were carried out by interplanting female rows in male population blocks and then emasculating those female rows or roguing out the fertile types, because some of the populations were a 50% mixture of a male sterile type, which we call a pistillate, which was a gynomonecious panicle type. Here's an example of a row behind the sign, which was emasculated, and a close-up on the right showing the emasculated panicles. And here's a row that contained the pistillate plant types, in which the normal pollen-shedding types were rogued out. Here's the grid showing the parent populations and their crosses. We had 5 unique populations. FY cycle 13 was derived from Franklin, which is an earlier variety released by the University of Minnesota. PLAR cycle 12 had its origins in Lac La Ronge in Saskatchewan, Canada. PM3 cycle 16 was derived from M3, a variety which was developed by a private breeder some years ago. NEBR cycle 6 is derived from Needham, which was the first variety released by the University of Minnesota, and PBM cycle 13 came out of the variety Petrowski bottle brush. And for each of these parent populations, the parents per se were designated by the single letter, as shown in the yellow boxes, and their crosses are designated by the 2 letters, each letter representing the parent, the 2 parents. So in our first trial, we did 5 parent populations. We planted those out along with the 10 F1 populations and 1 Czech variety. We grew this out in 1 location in 4 row plots and analyzed the data with SAS-PROC mixed We tried spatial variability adjustments, but they weren't useful in improving the analysis. And then we used linear contrast to compare each cross to the mean of the parents. And that was what we called mid-parent heterosis. So here are the results coming up in the form of the significance of the of each contrast that we estimated. And the ones that were significant have an asterisk, and the ones that are bordering on significance have a number between 0.05 and 0.1. And then the traits we looked at are in the columns, and the contrasts are in the rows. The top row is all of the crosses averaged against all of the parents. And then below that is each individual cross compared to its the mean of its parents. And as you can see, there are no asterisks in the yield columns. And that's shown graphically here. You don't see much difference between the parent population shown here, these five columns, and the population crosses, these 10 here. They don't really look much different. And this is yield at 40% moisture. We also looked at hulled yield at 0% moisture, and same story. No significant contrasts were found for the heterosis estimates. So our preliminary conclusion is there is no evidence of yield heterosis among those five most likely heterotic groups. So there it is. This is the poster child for negative results. But before you thumb through your program book and look for the next paper, there's more to this story. We did some follow-up experiments. We did two things. First, we grew the same five parents in 2010 and the Czech, plus four F2 populations derived from some of the F1s, that is the F1s that were resistant to deer browsing. And then when we grew those out, we got also, again, no positive results. But we had an additional experiment that was constructed by adding another set of population crosses made by crossing a sixth parent with those original five, one that we had not really thought much about in the initial round of population crosses. And those crosses are depicted here. Don SR was the male parent in each case, and it was derived from K2. So there are five additional population crosses plus the six parents and a check. And here are the results from that analysis. You can see that overall, the parent populations seem to be somewhat less than population crosses. And in fact, when we ran that overall contrast, it was significant, averaging all the parents and all the F1s. For both yield and hulled yield shown here, we had highly significant contrast. Looking at the individual contrasts, FD, which is the population cross between F and D, was significantly higher than the midpoint. And in fact, this percentage shows the value, the comparison. So it's 28% heterosis over the mid-parent value for FD. Likewise, LD showed a 40% superiority over its two parent populations. MD also 36%, and all of these are significant contrast. The only one that was not a significant contrast was this one, ND, only 11% difference, and in fact not enough to be significant. But the final one, PD, showed a 62% increase over the mid-parent. So the Don SR crosses were different. All of them showed heterosis, well, actually all but one, while the crosses among the non-Don populations didn't. Was Don SR really that genetically distinct from these other five populations? We didn't really think it would be initially. That's why it wasn't included in the first round, and we thought it was similar to some of the other populations that were in there. But in order to further test this, we estimated the genetic distance between the populations using a set of 11 highly polymorphic SSRs. Each of these markers averaged about 46 alleles each. And this was presented in yesterday's poster as well as part of a study on the genetic diversity, not only of these breeding populations, but some wild populations as well. And this is the phylogram of the genetic distances that were calculated. These populations here are actually the lake populations that were looked at, and that's not of interest in this talk, but what is of interest is up here are the five original parent populations clustered together. And here is Don SR with a great deal of distance between it and the other five. How did this situation arise? We had to think about that. And the conclusion I came to is that it had probably had something to do with the fact that our breeding research patties are shown in this aerial photo here, are in an area where there's not as much separation as we would like. Because of resource constraints, these populations have to be grown in fairly close proximity to each other, and they undergo population improvement generation after generation in this proximity to other breeding populations. Now, we try to minimize pollen contribution from adjacent breeding populations, but over time, some blending, some crossing or movement of pollen probably occurs, so that we have, again, this situation where we've got a cluster of our breeding populations up here all together, which is different from the separation of some of the lake populations in the region. So why would Don SR be so different? And to illustrate that, here are two of the parent populations here, which actually happen to both be derived ultimately from the older variety K2. This one, FY cycle 15 through Franklin back to K2, and PBM cycle 14 was derived from another variety, again, which had its origins in K2. Well, these two populations, as they were being developed and recurrently selected, were grown in this close proximity in our breeding research patties. In the case of Don SR, we had it was selected directly from a K2 population which had been grown in a grower's patty in continuous production for 25 to 30 years in relative isolation from anything else. And so when it was selected and developed into a new variety, it had gone through this process of all these generations in relative isolation from all the other population. So that's why we think that it was that much different. There is, in conclusion, there's no evidence that the original five populations can serve as heterotic groups with each other. However, our performance results and genetic distance estimates show that Don SR is distinct enough that it could be a separate heterotic group from the other breeding materials. Now, this has implications for our future breeding work, and when we develop distinct breeding materials in the future, we'll need to be able to isolate those more from each other if we are to maintain their distinct genetic makeup. And I'd like to acknowledge that this was funded through USDA Cooperative Agreement and with help from a number of people, including wild rice growers. Thank you. Each trial had four reps. We were originally planning to do two locations in the first year, But because of budget cuts, we had to cut back from our operations at one of the locations. So we just had to make do.
So to some extent, the heterosis, the estimates that you had, you showed some fairly large differences,
yeah.
But they weren't significant, which is explained by the fact that you didn't have enough replication.
With wild rice populations are very heterogeneous, and I didn't really point it out on the slides, but if you were looking, you might have seen an LSD value. That the 5% column was actually an LSD value, just to throw it in there for comparison. And those typically are pretty high, just because of the variability within populations, which kind of contributes to the overall experimental variability.
Okay. And looking at these populations that you did with the Donna Sartre cross, did you see any other phenotypic response of the plant, not just in the yield values, but what did the plants look like in contrast? Because, mm-hmm. as wild rice producers are looking for something that's, also has, more yield, they're also looking for something that's also more standability and mm-hmm. lacks the ability to, want to senesce and move and senesce forward.
Yeah. Well, the only other trait that I didn't really show the results of that falls into that category would be flowering date. And Don SR was a very early variety. It was developed as such. And in crosses, as you can imagine, with some of the later materials like the PBM parent, the population hybrid was in between. And with one of the earlier varieties, which was the N variety, it was actually slightly earlier flowering, the F1 that is. So there were a few differences, but nothing really stood out other than